Welcome back to Sort of Sophisticated People. I'm Pete, and with me, as always, is Amanda.
Hey, everybody.
And this is the podcast where we dive into topics that we think make you more cultured. Am I right? I don't know. But really, it probably just helps to give you some cool conversation starters.
Totally does. Yeah, and today, we're doing something a little different than usual. We're going to do a little three-part series on how to get more cultured and curious.
I love that. Let's go. A little ambitious, though, I think. Do you think we could pull off a three-parter?
I mean, it is totally ambitious, but we're going to go for it.
Let's do this.
And today, we're going to be chatting with a special guest about his exceptional story as a son of a Russian couple who immigrated to Argentina before he
Wait, time out. Is it immigrated or is it emigrated? What do you think? Is it immigrated?
Emigrated.
Immigrated. You immigrate in, you emigrate out. Immigrated. Oh my God, that's so cool. Look at that. That should have been our word of the day.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
So, as a son of a Russian couple who immigrated to Argentina before he was born, then subsequently raised their family of eight in Buenos Aires with some pretty decent Russian influence. Before he ultimately grew up and immigrated to the United States as a young adult. And we are thrilled to have him in the studio with us today. And I'd love to introduce the one and only Alex Kripchuk. Hello, Alex.
Hey, hello.
Alejandro! ¿Cómo estás? Mi amigo.
Muy bien, querido, muy bien. Uh-huh. And it's also Alexei Petrovich Kripchuk.
My bad, yo. So, wow, we're going to have to get there.
¿Cómo estás? And здравствуйте.
Right. And
wait, comrade.
How do you say cheers in Russian? Is there
a word?
Nazdarovye. What is it?
Nazdarovye.
Oh my God. Okay, never mind. I don't even know how I'm going to keep up with
it. I'm just fascinated. How many languages do you know?
Five.
Five?
Well, yeah, I know.
I can speak five. I can find my way to the American Embassy in about seven of them.
Time out. Yeah. I mean, he only knows the bad words in like five. Relax. It's bad.
I don't believe that.
Okay, wait, full disclosure, people, like for all the listeners. Okay, so before we go any farther, like Alex and I go back like a long way, like, I don't know, 30 years?
30, 32.
Yeah, yeah. So if shit gets real, people, don't worry, okay? It's all good. Since we're diving into the whole like immigrant story a bit, I got a question though.
No, but wait.
What?
I have to say thank you for having me here.
Well,
it's a pleasure.
It's our pleasure to have you.
Yeah. Amen.
Right? Absolutely. Okay, first, like I'm just going hardcore at you right now. Like first question right off the bat.
Go for it.
Like, because you've been around for a while. Because Alex is not a young chicken anymore, people. What's like the one thing that you think Argentina got right? I know they got a lot of shit right. And don't go all on your soapbox right now about Argentina and everything. I mean, just like one thing that America should adopt from Argentina. Like a food or a custom or like a holiday, anything. I don't care. Just what's the top thing?
Well, no, for starters, there's so much in common because they're very cosmopolitan. They've accepted people from all over the world. So as a consequence of that, they have a saying that Argentines dress like British, are fresh like French, eat like Italians, and speak like Spanish.
What is that supposed to mean to me? Break that down.
From all of that, right, you have all of these different, cultural nuances that brought food or brought customs or brought different ways of looking at society. So yeah, it's a similar to America, but with more of a European flair. I can talk to you about they love beef because there's more cows than people.
There is, right?
Seriously. Is there really? That
we're
should
gonna,
be a fun
oh,
fact.
Dude,
is
we're
that
gonna
a fun fact?
We're going to get into the asados. All right. So you're just basically saying Argentines are just badasses that like have a little bit of everything. And like have this massive kick-ass influence.
They do.
Yeah, okay.
They do.
I get it. Is this where this whole episode is going to go? You might as well just tell me right now.
No, I know you're researching. I've talked to you for a lot of years, right? So you have some facts about it, and you know how big it is, how it runs from north to south.
Baby.
Right. So you start. How about this? How much do you know about Argentina? And then I'll correct you.
No, it's what? Oh, wow. Really?
I kind of like this.
No, I'm embarrassed. No, I'm embarrassed.
No,
I kind of like
it. Remember when we had Evan on the other day, and it was like, he had to like.
He knew a lot.
Yeah, I know. About Australia.
It's a good time.
Okay.
Puts you in your place.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. But before we do that, though, can we do the word of the day?
Oh, yeah, you totally do the word of the day.
Okay, so
explain it to Alex.
Okay. So this is the part of the episode where we introduce a word that we then have to subsequently figure out how to work it into the episode somewhere without making it seem like we're forcing it.
And the drunker I get, the more like I forget the word and Amanda has to remind me.
I mean, in all fairness, Pete's usually the one who gets it because
tell me the word.
I'm not a linguistic
tell
person.
Tell me the word.
Okay, you ready? So our word of the day is histrionics.
Histrionics, like Is that like relating to history?
Actually, no. It means an exaggerated expression of emotion. So like theatrics.
Oh, so kind of like hysterical.
Precisely, yes. And the word histrionics actually is derived from hysterical.
Okay, that totally makes sense. Like, I got it, right? All right, we'll figure out how to
work. You got the hysterical part. You didn't get the actual meaning of it.
Right, I know. And by the way, there's so much history behind that word.
My brain is just trying to get the Russian or the Portuguese or the Spanish translation to histrionic, but I think I know where you're going with this.
Uh-oh. You got to use the English version.
Histrionic.
Okay, fine. Histrionic. However you want to do it.
Histrionic.
Yeah, histrionic. Yeah. Okay. However you want to work it in, I don't really care. That's how this goes. All right, we got it. All right, so can we get started?
Yeah. So can we start with baby Alex?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. But wait, before we do that, I think we should give a quick backstory on Argentina, just so people have, like, context of Argentina, like, where he's from, period.
Okay,
like,
yeah. Okay. Good idea.
Alex, feel free to jump in if I do anything wrong. I just want listeners to have, like, a little info before we launch. Okay, so let's start with the name Argentina. It comes from the Latin word argentum. Alex, yes. What does that mean? Thank you.
Plata.
Plata. Silver. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Because when explorers showed up, they found a bunch of silver mines. Well, they just found silver, and then they made mines. They didn't, like, find silver mines. It wasn't like the indigenous
people. They weren't already there.
Exactly. Okay, you get the idea. Anyway, okay. So Argentina is this totally massive country located in South America, bordered by mostly Chile and Brazil, but also Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, and runs almost the entire length of the Atlantic Ocean, like in South America anyway. Like, it's a long-ass country. It's the eighth largest country in the world. I looked that up. I'm not wrong. Covering over 1 million square miles. Did you know this?
Yes, you're doing great.
Okay, good. Yes. Okay, the capital, I can't even say this word. The capital, Buenos Aires. Right. Buenos Aires, right. Also known as Paris of South America.
There you go.
There's that French influence, right? For its vibrant culture and European-inspired architecture. Shit, dude, Alex, you're good. Okay, you know how many people it's got, más o menos, or no?
Yeah, about 35, 40 million.
I looked at it, under 50 million.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Counting all the illegals.
Yeah. God, I love it. Okay. Mostly from Spain and Italy, but also has a bunch of indigenous communities as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's known for its diverse landscapes. Am I right, brother?
Yes.
The Andes Mountains in the west.
Yes.
The glaciers of Patagonia and Ushuaia in the south.
180 glaciers.
100? Seriously?
Seriously.
Did you count them all?
No, but that's what...
That's a lot of effing
glaciers. We've been taught in school. Not only that...
Global warming, dude. I think there's only like 50 left.
Dude.
No?
There's a lot. The biggest reservoir of fresh water is down in Argentina.
Where is that? Like at the Tierra del Fuego?
Actually,
the tip?
There's a water table.
Yeah.
So it's all of the Amazonian water and everything else flows under.
Shit, it all runs off.
Right. And under the Pampas. That's why they call it the humid Pampas.
Oh, shit. Look at that. So there you go. So, right. You got the glaciers. You got the mountains. You got the rainforests. And then you got the Pampas.
It runs from north to south.
Yeah.
So you have United States running east to west. You're running a country now from the equator to the South Pole.
I didn't realize how big it was. Like when I looked it up,
that
it was
is
like
massive.
The eighth largest country in the world. In the world.
Right.
Pretty badass.
Right. Yeah.
Holy crap.
But so geographically, it's so diverse, right? You see east to west, but from north to south, east to west, you're changing all of these geographies to beautiful, wonderful, and spectacular.
Compared
place.
To the United States. Because the United States has some pretty kick-ass geography. Give me a sense.
Yeah.
Just as good, better, same, just different.
I mean, but like same have... concept.
If I had to say it,
yeah,
God hangs out.
In Argentina. Fuck yeah. Oh, shit. Right. I love that. Oh, yeah, right. So good. Okay, I love the way you said that. All right. Okay, I'm almost done. So what are they famous for? So famous tango.
Yes.
Right? The classic.
They invented tango.
Tango, absolutely. Sure. The tango. Sure. Asado. We were talking about asado.
But first, tango is a side story. Someday we have to talk about it.
Maybe we'll talk tango. Do whatever we want in this.
Okay.
Well, this is gonna be
so excellent. Remind me about tango because it's the most macho dance that you've ever experienced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I figure me and you, we could start
a
restaurant.
It was born into brothels.
We could start a restaurant called the Tango Grill and we could have Argentine food and have the...
And tango music.
No, he knows too much about me.
So. There's a lot. Okay.
I had a failed restaurant called the Tango Grill.
He did. Yeah. It was excellent. It was a good idea.
But anyways.
We talked about asado.
Right.
Empanadas.
Right.
And yerba mate.
Yerba mate.
Amanda.
Right.
He brought the yerba mate.
What is it?
Alex, what's yerba mate?
Oh, my God. So it's a stimulant drink, and you drink it hot or cold, mostly hot, right? It's carved from a gourd. And then it's covered in leather because that's a fancy one. But then you put this dry tea leaves that only grow. And the northernmost part of Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay, and it's called the yerba.
Okay.
Now, yerba is like yorba. It's the same thing. Yerba linda, yerba linda. It's about the same word.
Hey, do you remember Indians, like American Indians, with the peace pipe?
Uh-huh.
Smoke 'em peace pipe?
Uh-huh. Right.
This is their version of smoke 'em peace pipe. They pass that shit around.
Huh. Yeah.
Literally. So,
they pass a gourd around.
Yeah. It's about, and you suck. You drink out of that thing.
Yeah.
You share
the hot water,
it's about
and
friendship.
Else,
oh, really?
You
literally, it's all about friendship and community.
The only thing I know about yerba mate is that it now comes in a can, a yellow can.
Yeah.
No, okay. Is that the same thing?
It's a stimulant. It's got twice the caffeine of coffee.
They're trying to bring it to America, but you lose the concept of the custom of like the
community. The cultural
part. You lose
part
the
of
whole
it.
Cultural context.
Yes, you can put yerba mate in a monster drink or a stimulant drink or whatever, and you're going to get the kick. But unlike coffee, it doesn't have any acid content, so it was not going to give you a heartburn. And then
it's not going to give you GERD.
It's not going to give you GERD.
The gourd is not going to give you GERD. Oh my god! There you go. TM, that was hysterical.
Okay, so I mean, from my limited knowledge of Argentina, I guess I equate Argentina with Malbec because from what I've heard is that it's grown from the best soil in the world at the base of the Andes.
It's true. And then there's all these even Malbec tours now from here.
When are we going?
So let's go.
Let's go.
You're going to see, I mean, there's a lot of artisanal growers and small wineries. And
yeah, somewhere like the boutique wineries.
Well. Right. Alex, dude. Enough with the histrionics. Okay. Put your hands down. Just get to your damn Malbec story.
I do better.
Okay. Histrionics. He got the word of the day.
Okay.
Let's go. I want to hear this.
I do better when I put some drama into it, right?
You put in drama.
Very
mama.
Expressive.
Let's go.
Yeah, right. I got the school story about Malbec, really. Argentines went to Europe to compete for wines, and they thought they were bringing the best Merlot ever done, right? And Merlot is a wine. It's a variety, right?
Yeah.
And the French started turning up their noses and they're going, no, this is not Merlot.
The Frenchies turn up their noses at everything. Seriously.
Well, they're the best in the world at wines.
Okay, fine.
So I guess.
Would my brother-in-law say that? Right? He probably would. Yeah. Right. Yeah. How do you even deal with that guy?
He's.
Okay. Subject for another. Part two? We'll park that in part two. Go ahead. Continue with Malbec. Okay.
So no, the French started suspecting that this is not a Merlot, that it was some kind of a different wine. The Argentinians, of course, were insisting that they went to France to compete for the Merlot. Long story short, they had to do a DNA test on the grapes.
Yeah, to figure out what varietal.
What happened was...
I'm totally outclassed right now that you guys know this. I love this.
Oh,
continue.
I love wine.
Yes,
fascinating.
Go.
What happened was that about 100 years ago, there was a huge drought, right, in southern Germany, northern Italy, and a whole bunch of wines were lost, extinct. But the Italians, again, Pete was right, about 50, 60% of Argentinians came from Italy and Spain. Spain. They brought these Malbec sprigs and planted them on the volcanic soil of the Andes. So it resurfaced in Argentina for the first time. So now the Malbec.
So wait a second. Are you telling me that Malbec didn't exist in like 1980?
No. And whether.
So it wasn't until this all happened.
Right.
1995 or whatever you're saying, that they realized they found.
It was a different variety from Merlot, right? And Argentines were mixing it with like table wine years.
Was this in the news? And I just didn't know what the fuck was. This is amazing. So Malbec just reappeared.
Peter, how long ago have you started drinking wine?
Not long. I'm like a wuss.
Okay. So you're talking to an old wino here,
okay,
right?
Got it.
When it happened,
it was huge.
Oh, America took it by storm.
Right.
Now they grow it in Napa Valley.
Okay, so now I have a question: is that the biggest thing in Argentina? Like, is that like is Malbec comparable to like Lionel Messi or what?
Oh no, Argentines have Maradona, right? Uh-huh. The Coke head.
Yeah. They have Messi,
they have
Maradona, and they
the
have
best
Malbec.
Player in the world.
The three M's. They got three M's.
No, they also have the Pope. The Pope is Argentine.
The Pope. Oh, geez. They have
Pope. Heck yeah.
Oh.
That's right. Well, that's three M's and a P. That's
so they have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Oh my God, I love that. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. But go back, because we always do this thing where we start from the beginning, and I think we kind of have to start with baby Alex. So we need the backstory here. So maybe start with how did your parents end up in Argentina in the first place?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Just like every other immigrant, except that, you know, between Poland, Ukraine, and Russia, everything was taken by the Soviet Union. So One half of my family was from Poland, the other one from Ukraine, which was the Soviet Union. So we were supposed to be Russian because Russia took over.
So this is why Alex and I are brothers, because Balinski goes all the way back to the Ukraine.
Total. If you're saying Russian, Ukrainian, Polish, Latvian, Slovakian, Romanian, they were all Russian because they're all Slavic. Just like Latinos speak Spanish, the Slavics speak some kind of a variation. And yes, there are different languages and different alphabets, but they can understand each other. It's almost like Spanish and Portuguese.
Yep.
So, yeah, when you know, if you call me a Ruski when I was a little boy, okay, I accepted it. But I really wasn't.
Dude, you still even sound like a Ruski.
What's a Ruski?
Let's go. A Russian.
Oh. Right.
Oh.
Totally.
Is that a bad name?
Is that a bad name?
Is it like...
Like a Ruski?
No. Pinko or Kami.
No, yes, that's
but
bad.
Ruski is Ruski.
Oh.
Comrade, right?
Yeah. Okay, okay. So I've got to fast forward. We're going to be here all night long. So your parents like basically pop out a few kids and then...
After 3 years of famine by the Soviets into Ukraine and Poland, right? And in the worst of World War II, between, 1935 and 1940, they escaped. So they
Your parents
escaped. Yeah.
Got it.
So, and then they brought my grandparents along and basically...
Oh, it was a family affair.
Basically, there were peasants, so they were not, bringing any, World War secrets or weaponry or anything else like the ones that came here Germany and Russia. Nah, they were peasants. So Argentina...
They were hiding in Kripchukville.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Wherever that was.
Yeah.
That's how everybody was named.
So
back then.
Argentina was the land of opportunity for them. Why? Because the corn grew like 2 feet long and the wheat was past your tits. And I mean, it's just, Ukraine is fertile, right? Well, Argentina, they say that if you take a shit in your backyard,
it'll grow.
No, the next morning, it'll grow an asshole out of the world.
Okay, listen, can we get back on track? Okay. So now your parents are in Argentina. They pop out a few kids, and finally you're born. Okay, what number were you?
Number 4.
Okay, so what was going on when baby Alex popped out? So like, give me a... when were you born? What, 50s?
Because you fled. They fled.
They fled, and then they started popping kids,
They built a cabin. They made a family.
Right.
They built a cabin?
I don't know. I'm making this up.
No, it is. Believe me, yes.
People, I'm trying to... I'm just trying to keep us on track, all right? So there they go. They're working the land. Alex comes out.
And this is what happened. And I have to go back a little bit.
Okay.
The Germans, after the war, came to Argentina also, but they came with all of the loot and the gold that they took out of the concentration camps and the Jewish gold.
Oh.
Even though they lost the war, they came with money. The Russians and Slavics that came from the famine, they came to Argentina just holding their bag and that's it. So they sent those guys, us, right, all the way up to the jungle where it was hot and tropical and humid.
Bad idea.
But the Germans, they went down south. Like I told you, Argentina runs north to south where it looks like Germany. So they have snow and beautiful places and lakes and everything else. And so there was a big separation. By the time I was born, in a matter of 15 years, my dad had managed to move from those Russian colonies in the jungle to Buenos Aires.
Okay.
So
he infiltrated the German.
He worked his way up the ladder.
System.
You bet. He was a shoe cobbler. He was a truck driver.
Good for Mr. Kripchukovich.
Oh, worked his butt off. Right.
Cheers
worked
to your butt. Pops. Let's go.
Build a 2-story house with 6 bedrooms and raise a family over there. And we're getting to the political side of it because that's when I was born in 1956, right? This demagogue, Juan Perón, the husband of Evita. I don't know if you saw the movie or the play.
Totally.
Yeah. So he was a military man, very, very strong, right wing, almost fascist, but he became a populist. So he started giving loans and facilitating business and everything else. My dad took advantage of that, and he started building his own business in 1956. I was born in my house, in my mom's bedroom, and still with my mom and dad barely speaking Spanish.
Huh.
So our culture, I would say, until I was 6 years old. It was all Russian or Ukrainian or Polish.
Slavic.
So I was born under a military dictatorship or a military junta. Born and raised.
I mean, that must have been really hard and really difficult.
You have no idea.
And I'm assuming that shaped a lot of you growing up, because that was your formidable years and how you viewed life and your future. Mm. How was your teenage years? Yeah.
So very restricted, right? Very police-controlled state and society. There were things happening in Cuba, right?
Yeah.
So these military juntas said, we don't want any type of communism infiltration or like Cuba and Russia and everything else. So they kept it pretty under control. I guess we grew up knowing for a fact that the police does not represent the law like here in the United States. The police is the law.
Oh.
So it was a police state. Very difficult. Yeah.
So then, is that why you guys chose America? Was it you? Was it your parents? Like, how did that decision come into play?
I made the decision when I was 15 years old.
You did?
On my own, by
myself.
Oh
my gosh.
By myself. It was getting harder and harder and harder. And also, I need to say this. I had two lives, basically. In the Russian community, right? And we're all Christian, Baptist. Coming from an Orthodox religion. But then as I got more into the Argentinian culture, I started to see that this wasn't right to live under oppression. So I also tried to create or lead some kind of a change there. And
at 15?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And so...
So wait a second. Tell me about the when we were researching this episode, when I was doing this with you, you told me about this. What was the name of that movie I watched? The Raging Sea?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of the Raging Sea.
Cry of the Raging Sea. Right. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about like how that whole thing happened. Because I saw you in a video on YouTube. You were like 14 years old.
Yeah.
You were, what?
No, it's like a 22-minute YouTube video. Yeah. This is amazing. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about like how that whole thing happened. What was going on there? So you're growing up. You're pissed off at the military junta. You want to come to America, you're in a Slavic community, and all of a sudden this Baptist dude shows up.
Right. And so this guy from this missionary, right, a Russian guy from Wheaton, Illinois, comes to Argentina and said, wait a minute, there's different religions here coming from Europe, all Slavics. We're all going to make you Christians. Said, okay, well, we're Christians already, but what do you mean Christian as far as doctrine? We're going to make you Southern Baptists.
Oh.
you can imagine this in the middle of the jungle in Misiones. We started the only Russian church. And my dad, when he later on moved to Buenos Aires, contributed to the formation of a Russian Bible Institute to train missionaries to try to get the word of God behind the Iron Curtain. So that was my formative years.
Okay.
Right? I knew nothing about soccer or Malbec or
beef any of
or
that,
anything.
Yeah.
No. This was my Sunday school, right? So it was a little bit of an activism because everybody from the colonies, from the Russian colonies in Argentina, would move to Buenos Aires, go through a 3-year training, and then the mission was to smuggle Bibles. Right. So the mission was to prepare the sons of immigrants like myself, like two of my brothers who did it because they were older than me, went through this training, just like many, many others, 4 or 5 years older than me at that time. They went through the Russian Bible Institute.
That your dad started.
That my dad contributed to the startup of it. Obviously, America had a lot to do with it because in America, everybody was against Russia and the Iron Curtain. In Argentina, they were just happy to be there. Mm. Being Argentina, they left Russia and they said, we want nothing to do with it. And the Americans that came over there said, hey, let's do something for your relatives that were left in Russia.
So that was the movement that started.
we did things that is unbelievable. I mean, I have another 20, 30 minutes to talk about.
Oh, my
about,
God, no. But, tell it. Because you were telling me the story about the Russian, like, warship or whatever the hell that was.
Sure.
Tell that. Yeah. Sure. No, we got to hear that.
Well, like three things.
Amanda, this is nuts. Like, just get ready.
Like, to give you an idea, we said, okay, well, we wanted to do something to get the Bible to Russia behind the Iron Curtain. And we'd read this book, and he was our hero. I mean, you know, when you're a kid, you have Spider-Man and Batman and Superman and everybody else. We had Brother Andrew.
Did he have a cape?
No.
Was he a good brother?
No. He was a great...
Okay, he was a good brother. Right,
he wrote a book. You can still buy the book. He had a Volkswagen, and he was from Denmark to Russia. He was smuggling Bibles into Russia. The book is called God's Smuggler. So what kid doesn't want to be a pirate?
Right.
Or a smuggler? Yeah. We wanted to be smugglers.
Adventure.
You're 15 years old, and you're dealing with this guy, Brother Andrew, and you're starting to smuggle Bibles?
Oh, you bet.
All right, go.
This is
amazing.
You know, not only that, but when you're 15, they scare you with the apocalypse and the end of the world or global warming or whatever it is. So you say, oh, no, I got to do something to save this planet.
Right.
You know, so I said, I better listen. Well, there was a Russian scientific research vessel that went to Argentina, and because he was denied petrol in two other countries.
Petrol?
Yeah, fuel.
Gas. Not gas? Okay, got it.
No, they don't run on gas.
I'm American. I'm a loser. What do I know?
They don't petrol. Run on gas. They run on petrol. That's why they smoke so much.
Petrol, different than gas. Yeah. Got it. Okay, sorry. My bad.
And it's crude. They burn crude.
Oh, it's crude.
So we knew that it was there. We wanted to practice our Russian language. So we went to the port and started talking to these guys. These guys invited us into the ship. We saw a mini sub there.
Russian people? Like the Russian military people?
Well, we were... It
got you on the ship.
We were fluent in Russian. And they thought that we were sleeper cells.
Oh, my God. This is amazing.
They thought we were sleeper cells planted by the Russians in Argentina because we spoke Russian fluently.
Uh-huh.
So they go, whoa, so what are you doing here? And do you know judo and karate also? And do you know how to shoot and everything else? And I said, no, we do have powers. What powers do you have? And we peeled a little Bible, like a mini Bible. In Russian, I said, this is the two-edged sword. It can kill your old man and bring your new humanity into you. And they're going, no, I can't accept that. And they would grab it from us immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, they go, can you bring me more of these? So we went off the ship, nice visit and everything else. Is, huh, well, tomorrow we're going to come back and bring a few duffel bags.
In your little Volkswagen with Brother Andrew.
He was in Denmark.
Whatever. Markets. Okay. Right, so. My bad. Sorry.
So, no, Brother Andrew. Sorry.
We're right. Emulating.
Andrew's already done. Okay.
We became God's smugglers now, man.
Right. Got it.
We had a covert operation going, right?
Yeah.
So we bought, I remember, we bought Levi blue jeans, Wrigley Spearmint gum, and all kinds of stuff that the Russians
can't have.
Contraband.
Can't have,
contraband,
right?
Brother.
Right. And we filled it with about 50, 70 of these Russian Bibles. And I'm not kidding you. The pages were like rice paper. They were not even bigger than a cigarette pack. You needed, you actually needed a magnifying lens to read it. But that's the way that we got Bibles and to Russia. So we come to port and we thought, okay, well, let's give these bags to the boys that they're going to go up and put them away. Well, for some reason, we didn't know what we were doing. This lifeboat opens, hanging off the Russian ship. The tarp opens, and this guy goes, hey, what's going on? Toss him overboard. So we tossed about four duffel bags overboard, and he hit him in.
Because he knew he was going to get busted.
Sure.
They weren't allowed to have him.
No. Are you kidding me?
Oh, shit. So they were like trying to sneak this shit. They were helping you sneak this shit in.
Peter.
This is amazing.
The ones that were now you see a guy with no hair on his head and you go, oh, okay, well, that's cool.
By the way, if I didn't love you before, I have a whole new level of respect for you right now.
Good.
When I was 15 years old, I would go to Disneyland and I would come home and I would have funny dreams.
You were a different 15-year-old, that's for sure.
Okay. Sorry, continue. Sorry.
Not different than anybody else. So this guy, you know, grabs all the bags. You know, somebody told us when we were making the bags, one of the elders in the Russian church, they're going, you know what they're going to do with this. They're going to sell it. They're going to sell it. And we thought to ourselves, I don't care if they sell these Bibles in Russia. For good or for bad, for profit or non-profit.
It's getting out there.
It's getting out there, right? No sooner we do that than we're trying to go back and leave the port, right, the dock, and a military jeep pulls up. Now, remember I told you before, it was under military dictatorship, with curfews, with police control stuff.
And you speak Russian.
And I speak Russian.
Holy crap.
And the guys in the Russian ship, you know, thought that we were sleeper cells in Argentina. So all four of us and two girls with us also, because we wanted to be here in front of them.
Guaranteed one of them was Katarina.
In front of Katarina and right. Nadia. We wanted to be, you know,
let's go, right.
You know, and I mean, everybody just in trouble, right? White as a paper. I mean, just froze. And the guys are going, well, what's going on? What contraband did you just put into the ship? And little Alex, I got my bollocks to go and say, well, you know, what we did here is we gave him Bibles. And the military guy looked at me and goes, I have a son about your age. And he would probably do a stupid thing just like the one you did right now. Those guys don't deserve Bibles. They're communists. They're bastards. They're atheists. And we're looking at them going, but they need Bibles. So he goes, I don't know if I should incarcerate you or let you go. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to go and ask the captain if he saw anything. By the time I come back, I don't want to see you here. So he turned around. He took the jeep up to the ship. We looked at each other and booked it. I mean, as fast as we could. We had no cars. We had to wait for a bus to get home.
This is amazing.
It's wild.
I love this. Yeah. So what happened? Like, what? The Russian ship leaves, and you no more Bibles into Russia, or you have like you come up with
plan? No. I didn't come up with any plans, but we had a plan. Oh yeah. So the Slavic Gospel Association, Wheaton, Illinois. They still exist, by the way. They made us write these letters, right? This is great because that's how we speak Russian. I can read it. I can write it because we were doing this. And so we write this letter to aunts and uncles that we didn't know we had, 10, 15 per kid in Sunday school. But then they gave us this little rice paper sheet that had tiny little microfiche squares in it and a piece of plastic about the size of a postcard that was engraved. Kind of like a vinyl music.
Yeah,
like
a record. Yeah,
right? Super clear. And if you put it away from a page, it would augment, or you could see it just like a loop, just like a magnifying glass. So we put that piece of plastic, that rice paper with a Bible in it, and our handwritten letter, and mail it off to Russia. Yeah. So that's another way that we smuggle the word over there. Even though we had...
The word was written on all that little... Oh, microfish?
Believe me, they were.
You were like smuggling letters into
in
Russia.
In the trenches, right?
Right, getting Bibles microfiche into Russia.
Oh, yeah. God smuggler, man.
You seriously, dude. You weren't effing around.
Wait, I tell you that. I guess to me, the best one, because, yeah, that one's exciting. The one about the Russian ship is exciting, and it happened to me.
I have none of these stories. I need to figure it out. I need to make up
stories. It's like a whole life. Like, Amanda, you've lived you multiple lives.
Okay, sorry.
I have limited time.
I have like a question here, though. Because don't get me wrong, I love all this, Alex. But can you explain what this has to do with answering Amanda's original question, which was like, why did you choose to immigrate to the United States? Because we just got off on like 55 different tangents, which I thought were amazing.
I mean, besides just being fearful for your life.
Right.
I feel like there's...
At one point,
how did this all connect to the United States?
So, and the last one about this, smuggling Bibles and smuggling the Word of God into Russia was... that we also had a shortwave radio station in Quito, Ecuador. Now, you know the equator is the half
in
of
Quito.
The world.
How did you have, who did you know in Quito?
Well, the community.
The Slavic community.
The Slavic community, right?
You were connected, dude.
So, okay. Oh, yeah, and we became a force, right? Everybody just got excited about doing something to try to get the word into Russia.
Yeah.
Because there were Russian Christians over there suffering. Yeah.
So when is it? Sorry, this is 1970.
Yeah, 69, 70, 72, yeah. 73, 74.
Okay, yeah, yeah, gotcha. Right? Okay, go ahead, yeah.
So they told us that you know what short waves are?
Yes.
Yeah, short wave radio. Before computers, before internet, before everything else. They told us that if you put a short wave transmitter on the equator, then you can bounce off the short wave signals all the way 6 times on the crust of the Earth, all the way to Siberia, right? So that's how it works. And so these guys from the United States, from the Gospel Association, would come in, and I mean, just so impressed, because they would bring a Sony reel-to-reel recorder.
Mm-hmm.
They would give us a Bible in Russia, and they go, okay, we're 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. Start reading passages of the Bible in Russian, and they would record it.
Wow. And just so start bouncing that shit over to Russia.
Right. And we didn't know why they picked us.
Damn.
But there's a twist to it, right? So the word was getting all the way to Siberia. I'm going to fast forward. And in the year 2000, 1999, actually, 3 months before Y2K, I was already in the States. And I'll get to how I got to the States and everything else.
We were already best friends.
But I was asked to go as an interpreter and translator for a group of...
To Siberia. I remember this.
To Siberia.
Oh, my God. I remember when you went.
Yeah.
That's why you went.
Yeah. So a group of dentists from the Rotary Club in Corona and in Loma Linda decided to go to Siberia to the orphanage there to work on the orphanages and give him portable dental equipment. And they needed people who spoke Russian. I was a Rotarian at the time. I went with them.
Yeah.
Long story short, I'm with them doing the thing and everything else with the kids. That's another chapter, right, to talk about the orphanages.
Ooh. Oh,
holy crapanoli.
While I was there, I said, hey, is there a Christian church anywhere here? And they said, yeah, Wednesday nights they meet at this apartment house. So I went over there and they were having service. So I stand up, I introduce myself, and they go, hey, great, welcome, God bless you and everything else. And then after this service, I looked at an old man in the back of the church. Because remember, I'm talking...
Yeah, you were 9 years old. You were translating shortwave radio in Argentina through Ecuador all the way over there. I'm picking this up.
And now, right? And now it's Y2K, so everybody has a computer.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So I look at this old man, and he says, yeah, I'm one of the elders in this church.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Vladimir. I go,
do you remember?
Do you know who I am?
No shit!
He goes, how can I know who you are? You're half American. You speak with an accent. You come here... you know, you say greetings from California.
Right. How can I? Pour me a vodka.
Well, I go, when I was a little kid, I go, we had a shortwave radio station in Ecuador. And he went like this. He did the call letters for the radio. He went HCJB, the voice of the Andes. Every Wednesday night, we got the word of God in the dungeons.
Alex, I have a question. Did he do that like... in like all sorts of histrionics?
Histrionics.
Or no, absolutely.
Oh,
yes. Let's go. Yeah. That's two for me. Okay.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
He remembered.
Oh, yeah. He says, we were lucky. We were listening to the message.
Yeah, I don't even know.
And then you kids couldn't read Russian fast enough or good enough, but we were handwriting what you were writing and correcting your mistakes and your pronunciation.
Holy shit.
It's crazy.
Oh, my God.
In this day, I can't even, like, that gives me chills.
It's like full circle.
That is the best story I've ever heard. Oh, my God. I love that. Okay. I have a question, though. You have to explain what this all has to do with, like, immigrating to the United States, because Amanda asked you about an hour ago, like, so why America?
Wait, shouldn't we keep this for next time? Because you're promising me episode 2.
We're going to do episode 2.
But
promise.
Before we end, can we do some fun facts? Are there even fun facts?
How do I have fun facts about Alex? What are you talking about?
I mean, not necessarily about Alex, but it can be like Argentina in general.
Say I saved some fun facts about Argentina. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll do some quick fun facts about Argentina. Alex, tell me if you know these or not. Okay. So this is where we like sort of like just do some crap that people could take away and have a little fun with. Alex, did you know Argentine immigrants make up one of the smallest portions of the Hispanic Latino population in the United States, with only approximately 300,000 people of Argentine descent here in America? And despite these smaller numbers, they have had a significant cultural impact because they are loud AF, as you know. Only 300,000.
Wow.
I thought it would be a lot more than that. Did you know how many there were?
No, I probably figured it's a small number.
Yeah, but, más o menos. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. How, maybe it's 500,000 now, but yeah. Okay. Number two, Argentine immigrants in the U.S. have higher levels of education compared to other immigrant groups. Many hold advanced degrees and are employed in fields such as, like you were saying, engineering, medicine, and business. All right, number three. The largest Argentine communities are in Florida, especially Miami, California, Los Angeles, of course, and New York. Miami is sometimes called Little Buenos Aires because of its large Argentine population. And super fun fact, did you know that Miami hosts an Argentine Flag Day celebration every June 20th, honoring Argentina's national flag and cultures with parades, food, and music? We need to move to Miami, dude.
Yeah, let's that's go. Awesome.
Or
that's
you should just start your own little celebration
like a little
here.
Parade.
Right. Dude, yeah.
That's why Messi went to Inter
Miami. Grill.
That's why Messi's down in Miami
it
now.
Is.
That
yes.
makes sense.
Yes,
they have that huge Argentine community. I didn't even thought of that. Okay.
The whole
four.
Economy boosted there.
Okay, I don't want to get off track, but I mean, the whole reason he's doing this whole thing is so he can own a new soccer club in the United States. Okay. Number four, Argentines have brought their super cool culture to the United States. That's what we were talking about earlier, particularly through food, empanadas, asado, dulce de leche. Right. How did we not talk about dulce de leche? And music, like tango. Many Argentine immigrants in the United States are entrepreneurs. Thank you, Alex. Especially in the restaurant industry. Oh, I ChatGPT'd that shit, and that is your life.
Right.
That's hysterical. Uh-huh. All right. So apparently you started in the right place. And speaking of tango, did you know that Argentine tango festivals are held every year in both New York and Chicago? They're getting like really famous. Have you gone to see one? I got to go see one. I didn't go.
I haven't there, but yeah, I know.
I think we're going.
Yeah.
Let's go. And finally, okay, number five. As we said earlier, Argentina is famous for its Malbec wine, and Argentine immigrants have helped promote Argentine wines in the United States, leading to their popularity in American wine culture. Between 2004 and 2018, Malbec exports from Argentina to the United States increased 500% in volume and 800% in value. So, dude, get on the Malbec train if you haven't already.
I love this.
Right? Let's go. Right. Let's go. Let's own some stock. Let's get some stock.
I love that I've learned a little bit more about Argentina than I knew when we first started this episode. But Pete, I really feel like we need to have some call to action. Or do we just say to be continued?
I don't even know.
Because
here.
Like, what's the protocol?
No protocol. I don't even know. We're totally going rogue here. I did put something together for our listeners who might want to learn a little something more about Argentina before we get to the second part of the series. Should I do that?
Yeah. Why don't you tie it with a little bow?
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. So first, go watch The Secret in Their Eyes or El Secreto de Sus Ojos.
Yes.
Oh, look at that. Yes. It came out in 2009. It won Oscars, people. It showcases Argentine culture, history, and the nation's complicated political backdrop, as Alex was saying, during the 1970s. Or watch Argentina 1985. I just saw that one. It was frigging amazing. It's about how Argentina was returning to democracy and the whole trial of the military dictatorship before that.
Which I was already here.
Oh, my God. Excellent. Both of them, excellent movies. Okay, or if you're into reading instead of movies, read Imagining Argentina by Lawrence Thornton, a novel set during Argentina's dirty war in the 1970s. It's a really good historical fiction novel that gives some context of the challenges immigrants faced during that time. Yes.
Another movie I would recommend is The Two Popes.
Oh, unbelievable. Yes, absolutely. Have you seen this, Amanda? No, add this to your queue.
Just know that, yes.
Okay.
Just know that.
It is, oh my gosh.
Pope Francis.
Anthony Hopkins is Pope Benedict.
Right.
I forget who plays Pope Francis. Unbelievable.
But Pope Francis, right.
I'm going to watch it again.
Before I left Argentina, I had a close proximity to Pope Francis because he was a ghetto missionary.
Well, you knew
Brother
priest. Andrew. Might as well.
But I was into God smuggling, right? But this guy was a ghetto priest.
Huh.
And so just to understand what kind of a, you know, socialist ideas he brings to the Vatican today, you got to watch it because he was...
It's excellent.
Oh, definitely.
So well done. And he's so humble. If you're in New York or L.A., visit a museum. The Tenement Museum in New York or the Museum of Latin America, MOLAA in California. Both have highlights of Latin America immigrant stories, some specifically related to Argentine immigrants. While you're there, ask about Argentina's National Commission on Disappeared Persons. That's a real thing. 30,000 people disappeared during this military dictatorship. Disappeared. Unbelievable. And if you watch any of the movies we were talking about, it's all in there.
Always on that list.
It's unbelievable, right? And here you are. Visit a local Argentine restaurant, try empanadas, asado, or dulce de leche. We can all meet at Patagonia in Orange. Let's go, where this podcast was born. Or if you're super bold, take a tango class at a local dance studio or attend a tango night. You can find them almost anywhere. And finally, if you're really bold, just go visit Iguazu Falls, one of the world's most incredible natural wonders. Way, way better than Niagara Falls, people.
And there you have it, fellow listeners, a heartfelt and fascinating first leg of the journey through the life of a dear friend whose story spans continents, cultures, and eras. From growing up in the politically turbulent 1960s Argentina as the child of Russian immigrants to boldly moving to the United States at just 18 to pursue college and a fresh start, this episode has been a deep dive into resilience, identity, and the pursuit of new beginnings. If we've done our job today, you're walking away with not just a glimpse into one man's extraordinary journey, but a broader appreciation for how history and personal stories intertwine. Whether it's navigating the challenges of immigration, finding your place in a new world, or carrying forward the legacy of those who came before, the message is clear. Life's path is never linear, but it's always worth the walk. If you enjoy this episode, make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who appreciates a story that's equal parts inspiring and thought-provoking. And remember, every life, no matter how far it travels, holds lessons worth uncovering. Until next time, stay curious and stay inspired.